Are you sensing a trend here? Are you? Because everybody needs a defensive tackle. Hello and welcome in. It's a Thursday edition of Always College Football. It is April 18th. I'm Greg McElroy. Thanks for being with us. Mark Kubiak's here. Jack Foster's here. Jake Garcia's cutting it up behind the scenes. But we appreciate you coming to us from wherever it is you're coming to us from. Whether that's the Apple Podcast, if you can, leave us a rating, leave us a review. It's much appreciated. If you're on Spotify, leave us a rating. That'd be terrific. Subscribe wherever it is you get your podcast. That'd be awesome as well. And if you're here on the ESPN YouTube channel, subscribe to the ESPN College Football channel as well. Tons of great content, especially surrounding spring games this time of year. We have a great show for you today. The portal is open for business. And this is a snapshot of what teams are trying to address. Now, guys are on the move. More and more guys are going to the portal. Remember, it's open for the next 2 weeks. So we're going to see some big names probably hop in. I don't think it's going to be quite as chaotic as some people have projected. I saw some people saying that this will be the craziest portal day of all time. That was April 16th. It hasn't really materialized. Doesn't mean it can't get a little more chaotic right now, because I know NIL collectives are doing their best to retain their talent as best they can. I know that there's a lot of negotiations ongoing, so we will see where things go here in the days to come. But the portal is in the front of every single college football player's and fans' mind. So we're going to go through some of the top teams. What do they need to prioritize? What is the biggest target in the portal? I'm not going to talk necessarily specific players, but more position by position. We're also going to break down a bunch of spring games too, because there's a ton of teams. And while we're all focused on the portal, there's a ton of teams right now that are taken to the field this weekend to see what they can do in a spring game setting. So let's start with the portal, since that's at the front of everyone's mind, and talk about some target positions for some of the top teams in the sport. We'll start with the position that pretty much everybody wants. There's not enough of them. They've become a complete difference-making position. They can make an average defense look great, and all you have to do is kind of look back at the past national champions and acknowledge that while quarterback is without question the most important position in pursuing a national championship, defensive tackle is right there. So every single team that has legitimate hopes of getting to the playoff or doing some damage in the playoff needs to look hard at their defensive tackle spot, which is why everybody needs one. It'd be easy for me to just go through all these teams and say, oh, a list of needs. D-tackle. Yeah, everybody needs a D-tackle. Look back at Marcell Dareus, Terrence Cody, Deron Payne, Quinnen Williams for the Crimson Tide, Christian Wilkins, Dexter Lawrence for those two teams that Clemson had. You look at what Georgia had in 21 and 22. You look at the defensive end talent that Ohio State had in 14. Just pretty much across the board. If you can add a quality defensive lineman, in particular, a quality defensive tackle, you are cooking with gas. Look at Texas last year. Their best position, defensive tackle. They almost got to the playoff, and I think a lot of people thought that if they got to the national championship, they would have matched up a little better against Michigan because of the quality that they had at the defensive tackle spot. So let's just acknowledge that everybody and their brother wants a defensive tackle. There are a couple teams that we will get to that also really want to prioritize that spot, but just know across the board, everyone wants one. Let's start with Ohio State. The big question about Ohio State, I think, is at right tackle. You could make a case that perhaps a guard would be beneficial, but they really want to bring in a guy that can at least compete with Josh Freier, who started at right tackle last year and took vast majority of the first team reps this spring, but they definitely want to add competition to that spot. And with Freier's versatility, he could slide inside. Knowing that the right guard spot is still, for the most part, unsettled, landing a right tackle would allow Freier to move inside. And if they can't get a guy at right tackle, then you leave Freier out there, which is fine. You just need to be mindful of that. And maybe you bring in a guard to compete with the trio that's currently competing at that spot. So offensive line, in particular, the right side of the offensive line for the Buckeyes needs to be the highest priority. For Penn State, it's wide receiver. Now, Penn State was already looking for some receiver help, and then Keandre Lambert-Smith decided to enter the portal on Monday. They'd already engaged in a bunch of transfer targets back in December, hosted a few. They did add Julian Fleming, which was significant, and he might ultimately become their number one guy at the position, but they don't have a single receiver on their roster that has over 1,000 career receiving yards. Only Julian Fleming has over 600 career receiving yards. And while he's had some injuries and had some ups and downs in his four-year Buckeye career, having a guy that is proven would be really valuable. Also, another issue for Penn State is that their junior, Harrison Wallace, who I think had some pretty good moments in 23, albeit on bookend moments of the season, first game of the year against West Virginia, last game of the year against Ole Miss, is really kind of an injury-plagued season. He could be eyed as a guy that could be at the top of the pecking order, but at this point, I think they're probably still looking to add a guy that has a little more experience, so a wide receiver for Penn State would be very valuable to complement Harrison Wallace and Julian Fleming, especially knowing both has had some injury histories in the past. Let's go to Michigan, the defending national champs. I think the big thing for Michigan is to add depth and in particular size to the wide receiver position. Now, you look at some of the guys they had last year. How often did you see Michigan lined up in 10 personnel with four wide receivers on the field? Very rarely, right? What Michigan mostly lived out of was two wide receivers with Roman Wilson and Cornelius Johnson, Roman CJ. Those two guys were basically the only two wideouts that you saw with crazy amounts of playing time. You saw multiple tight ends on the field. And knowing that they might even be moving in the direction of kind of a run-centric quarterback, maybe they feel pretty good about the pecking order at wide receiver right now. Tyler Morris, Fred Moore, Samaj Morgan, I think they'll be okay at that spot. But to add a guy that's a go-getter, it's maybe 6'2", 6'3", that can be a factor in the red zone to take some of the pressure off of the tight ends would be really valuable. So I think Michigan, probably looking to the portal, and there's a few different positions that Michigan would like to add, but receiver, I think, needs to be of the highest priority. The USC Trojans, this shouldn't come as a huge surprise. It's USC. They've had challenges in the past along the line of scrimmage defensively. So I'm going to go interior defensive line for USC. That's their highest priority. Now, they grabbed a huge piece when they went and added Isaiah Rakes from Texas A&M. He's 320 pounds, but now he's off the roster. So now we're back to the drawing board. If you're USC, you also lost Bear Alexander in the portal as well. So Danton Lynn, as they've moved into this style of defense, the new defensive coordinator, they're trying to get bigger. They're trying to get bulkier. They're trying to find more gap eaters, guys that are 320, 330, that can just hunker down and allow those linebackers to play over the top with a lot of speed and agility. So I would think that USC is putting all their premiums on trying to add depth and size to the defensive line. I also think, too, that you can make a case that SC could be in position to land a wide receiver. There's already some buzz that they've reached out to Colorado State wide receiver transfer Justice Ross Simmons. There's some buzz there. Now, a bunch of people have already reached out to him, like Michigan State and Washington, Tennessee, and Cincinnati. A couple others have reached out to him, but he did have a really solid season last year for Colorado State, over 720 yards, and he's from Inglewood. So it makes some sense for him to potentially go back home, and that would be a guy I'd keep an eye on if you are the Trojans. Alabama, moving into the SEC now, the two positions are very obvious. Alabama needs to add pieces along the offensive line. Caden Proctor is en route back to Alabama from Iowa. Of course, remember, he left Bama, went to Iowa. Now he's back to Bama, more than likely, not official yet, not officially official, but it feels like at this point it's a formality. But I think adding depth to that position would be incredibly valuable. You don't want to be young along the offensive line. Now, can you get by? Sure, if you got great talent, but you better be surrounded by some veteran guys. So I think it'd be very valuable for Alabama to add some key pieces to the offensive line, whether it's in a depth role or in a starting role. That would be significant. Then the other position that I would think Alabama would probably target would be in the defensive backfield. Now, they already added Keon Sabb, who transferred down from Michigan to play one of the safety spots. We know that they're going to have some quality pieces in the back end. They've already added Damani Jackson from USC, who's likely to lock down one of the corner spots. The other positions are right now not much of a question mark, because of right now, Malachi Moore will occupy one of those spots, just a matter of which one. I would expect it to be safety. And then you look at the Husky position, which is new in Kane Womack's defense. Who's going to occupy that spot? If the season started tomorrow, it might be a true freshman. And then at the other corner spot, there's three true freshmen that are vying for playing time at that position. A couple are big-time recruits, like Mbakwe and Zabian Brown and Mincy. All those guys are very talented, but they're young. And anytime you go with a true freshman on the perimeter against grown men at wide receiver, there's going to be growing pains. I saw D. Milner in 2010 start as a true freshman, had a great year by all accounts, but there was a game or two in which he had challenges going against an Alshon Jeffrey, who was just bigger, more physically dominant at that point of his career. So expect for Alabama to target offensive line, potentially an off-the-ball linebacker just for depth purposes, and then some veteran competition in the back end, I think would be very, very valuable. The Florida Gators, first of all, when you look at where Florida's at from a scholarship standpoint, they're actually over the scholarship limit. They were at 86 the last I checked. So they'll start to evaluate some of the pieces and where they need to go. So in order for them to go out and get guys, they have to have guys enter the portal on their own accord as well. So watch closely. If Florida guys hop in, that will open up the door for Billy Napier to potentially bring in some reinforcements at positions that they have to go and get. I think they have to add a wide receiver in a perfect world. I think you'd love to add tight end depth. And offensive and defensive line are also a premium position for the Florida Gators. I think they feel pretty good about the top end of their wide receiver group with Will Sitton and what he's done in the spring so far. But if you can add some pieces there along both lines of scrimmage and a tight end, that would create more versatility in the offense and reinforce positions of need there for the Gators. The Georgia Bulldogs, they were really aggressive in the transfer portal back in December. They not only had 20 players leave the program through the portal, but they also added 8 players. Players like Trevor Etienne, wide receiver from Vanderbilt, London Humphreys, Miami wide receiver Colby Young, USC wide receiver Michael Jackson III, Stanford tight end Benjamin Urashek, and then South Carolina defensive tackle Xavier McLeod. So they have added some pieces, but I think Georgia is one of the few programs that might be in the market for a quarterback. There's not a ton, by the way, that are really in the market for a quarterback. And it's not to possibly move Carson Beck out of the starting role. We know who that's going to be. He's maybe the best quarterback in the country. But based on their pursuit of Jaden Mayava, who ultimately ended up at SC, remember he was at UNLV, they pursued Mayava. It looked like he was going to be a Georgia Bulldog until the last second. He switched, decided to go to SC, and now is in a prime competition alongside Miller Moss, who, based on the bowl performance, might be the guy to beat. I also think when you look at Georgia and the best Georgia teams of the past few years, they all had game-changing defensive tackles. They all had them. And right now, when I look at Georgia's defensive tackle unit, I think they're talented. I think they are talented. Nazir Stackhouse has had moments. Warren Brinson's a really good player. And they also have some other guys that are kind of looking to break through, some young guys that they feel good about. But at the same time, I don't see someone like Jordan Davis. I don't see someone like Jalen Carter. So if they could add a guy that could take over the game at D-tackle, that would be very advantageous to the Georgia front seven defensively. Let's go to Texas. Talked already about what Texas had last year at defensive tackle. Tavondre Sweat won the Outland Trophy. I think Byron Murphy, he did win the Big 12 Defensive Lineman of the Year, but those two were by far their best players. Byron Murphy, I thought, was arguably the most disruptive defensive tackle in the game last year. So those two leading the charge into the college football playoff are going to be really, really tough to replace. And you're already hearing from Steve Sarkisian and those around the program that Jaden Blue and CJ Baxter, they're really talented backs, but they've kind of dominated the defense by running between the tackles. At least that's what you've heard from the first scrimmage and some of the other things coming out of there. Had a couple touchdowns in the red zone, and for the offense to win the red zone portion of the second scrimmage is something that you're just not used to seeing or used to hearing, especially knowing what they had in the front last year. knowing that that group was as dominant as they were, and yet they're getting gashed by their own offense, that would be something I would look at. Now, Texas already brought in the transfer from Arizona, Tia Sevilla, who's 6'4", 293, to kind of fortify that defensive tackle rotation. And I think they're very encouraged by some of the growth that they've seen from Jarae Bledsoe and redshirt freshman Sadir Mitchell. But the other defensive linemen that they have kind of factoring in are areas that they're trying to figure out. Now, Mitchell's huge. He's 6'6", 372 pounds. He's a big dude, and he's a space eater. But will he be as good as Tavondre Sweat was when he carried about 360 last year en route to the Outland Trophy? Defensive tackle, a position of need to at least fortify some of the depth for the Texas Longhorns. Same can be said for the LSU Tigers. And Brian Kelly has said several times that defensive tackle is the only position that the Tigers don't feel like they've addressed just yet. He said, you look at what they have, they're trying to get after the quarterback. I think they feel really good about Jacoby and Guillory. He's been excellent. But Bo Davis, who is the new defensive line coach at LSU, was at Texas last year. He's one of the best in the world at what he does in coaching the defensive line. I would think they're trying to find that guy that can be next to Guillory that can also kind of take over the game. Now, not sure they've found that yet. And they do have a couple edge guys that they feel great about. And LSU is kind of in a difficult spot right now where they actually have 88 guys on the roster. 85 is the number. So they might have to lose a couple guys to add pieces to the defensive line, but I think they might have those departures anyways. Sounds like they might lose 5, maybe 6 to the portal. So if they do, expect Brian Kelly and his staff to put a priority on defensive line. Rinse and repeat with Texas A&M. It's defensive tackle. Are you sensing a trend here? Are you? Because everybody needs a defensive tackle. To lose McKinley Jackson, maybe their top player in the unit last year to the NFL draft. You lose Walter Nolan. You lose backup Isaiah Rakes. These guys are all gone. To have a proven defensive tackle in the portal would be really important, and add a guy with a big frame. The only two defensive tackles on their roster right now are listed above 300 pounds. Now, those guys are both. One's 380, one's 325. I think they feel pretty good about some of the size that they have at that position, but finding more bodies at that spot is very, very valuable. I also think for A&M, it's probably important for them to go and figure out what wide receiver is going to be their number one guy. And if one jumps in the portal that could be a game changer, I would expect the Aggies to be a player. Now, they have a really solid group. Really solid group between Moose Muhammad and Jahdae Walker, Noah Thomas, Cyrus Allen, Mike Tease. The injury to Jabari Barber was not good, but hopefully he can return at some point here in the very near future. So they're somewhat thin on numbers to an extent, but they don't have a receiver who has produced over a 1,000-yard season in college. And none of the four returning receivers have ever reached over 700 yards in a season. So I think adding a top-tier wide receiver would be really valuable for the Aggies as well. The Oklahoma Sooners, it'd be really valuable for them to address both sides of the line of scrimmage. Both offensive line and defensive line, having more bodies at those positions would be huge. They've had a ton of turnover along the offensive line. They've had some turnover along the defensive line as well. But I think finding more capable bodies at those spots would be really, really important. For Florida State, tight end is the position that you felt like it needed to be addressed heading into the spring. And they'll exit the spring almost assuredly looking for a guy at that position. Now, you look at what they have. Kyle Morlock is a really solid guy. Should be very serviceable. I think he's a guy that's going to be really, really solid. You got the young guy coming in, Landon Thomas, who's kind of figuring out those two and how they're all going to figure into kind of the rotation. But now if you can go add another tight end, would be really important. And we know when you look at Mike Norvell's system, having multiple hybrid players is valuable. You look at how they used Jaheim Bell last year and how often he got involved in the screen game and the run after catch game. Having a tight end that can break you open with the passing game is something that I think they will certainly be looking at. And if you want to have a road grader out there as well, terrific. More the merrier for Florida State, because the more versatility you have on that roster offensively, the more creative Mike Norvell can be. And we know that he is one of the most creative minds in the sport when given the opportunity. I also think they'll probably look at defensive tackle too. You got Joshua Farmer, who's a great spot. I mean, I think he's going to, when healthy, I think he's got a chance to be an elite player. Daryl Jackson has big upside, but we'll see what happens as he kind of goes on. But I think having depth at that position would be really, really important as well. The Miami Hurricanes, two positions that I think they're probably going to go after, okay? I think you go after a running back, possibly. I like their top guys, by the way. I think they have quality pieces at running back. But having more guys at running back is something that could be valuable. Remember, there were times last year when they were splitting reps four deep, and you had a couple guys already miss a little time this spring, even though Fletcher's going to be good, Allen's going to be good. Wouldn't be surprised if they kicked the tires on Oregon State's Damian Martinez, who's a guy that wants to get downhill and is a big body back that you know Mario Cristobal would probably like. I also think they're going to look at corner, whether Daryl Porter, Damari Brown, and Jadeus Richard. Those are the three right now that they should feel pretty good about. But having four at corner feels like something that might be necessary, especially knowing you might lose one of those guys at some point, and now you're down to two, and not having any reinforcements at that position is not something that I want to be involved in, knowing some of the passing attacks you might face in the ACC. It's so strange to me where we're at in college football, with free agency or portal season essentially starting, and yet you're looking at these spring games coming up this weekend, and it's like, well, hang on a second. I'm focused on the portal and all the guys entering the portal, roster retention, and yet I'm still trying to develop guys. I got a couple practices left, and I want these guys to play well. Because if you don't play well, if you're Sherrone Moore, for example, if you don't look good on Saturday when you tee it up for the spring game, he's got to answer a lot of questions over the next couple months when they go on the road to the Wolverine meetings and things like that. So it's weird the way our calendar is situated, but it is what it is. But we do have some spring games to look forward to this weekend. With Michigan, we'll start there, the defending champs. I want to know what's going on at quarterback. JJ McCarthy, we've seen his draft stock soar, rightfully so. He's a really good player. I don't think he ever got the credit he probably deserved at the college level, but the guy flat out won, knew how to get the job done. Two guys right now kind of battling for the position, Alex Orji. Now, there's an apparent injury to Jack Tuttle, the other guy that's involved, but Orji's got all the potential in the world to be a guy that can just take over the game. For those that haven't really watched him, he has some Jalen Milroe qualities with the ball in his hand. So he can take off and break you down, and he can get you a ton of yards with his legs. So he's probably going to be a guy that is used regardless of whether he's the starting quarterback. He's going to be a guy that's used in this offense. He's just too talented to keep off the field. But there are issues with the consistency throwing the football. So in order to be their guy that they're going to kind of center the offense around, he's going to have to show growth at the quarterback position, and maybe we'll get a look at that this weekend when they take the field for the spring game. Jack Tuttle, and a lot of Michigan's philosophy the last couple of years is kind of centered around a quarterback that can manage the game. Make a throw or two, maybe three, depending on the competition, that's going to break the game open, just like JJ McCarthy did in the national championship, did very little. Then he scrambles on a third down, deep in his own end, picks up 30 yards. The following drive, he has a tight end over the middle to break it open. I mean, he basically broke the game open with two big plays. Can the quarterback at Michigan do that again this year? And Jack Tuttle, if Alex Orji doesn't progress as a passer, he might ultimately be the guy. Now, you have a game manager that's been around that can keep the game defense honest. Watching him throw in pregame, I thought he threw a really nice ball. He's got a big arm. But it will be interesting to see whether or not that quarterback competition, we know it's going to go on for a while. Maybe Michigan adds a guy in the portal. We'll see. But either way, that quarterback competition is something that I look forward to watching. And more so, the progress of Alex Orji in the spring is something I'll be watching very closely. Michigan State also on the field. And with this one, I just want to see the new identity offensively. We know what Jonathan Smith was when he was at Oregon State. He was a ground and pound type of guy, set up with back to the defense play action, did a great job with quarterbacks. I just want to see the Michigan State roster. There's been so much turnover. There's been so much change. This is philosophically a little bit of a difference than what we've seen in the past, even though it's not that different because they ran the ball so effectively a couple years ago. But I'm just curious to see what Michigan State looks like across the board. I mean, I'll be watching every position. I might be as intrigued with Michigan State's spring game as any others because, man, it's been quiet in East Lansing this offseason, hasn't it? It's been really, really quiet. I think that's how Jonathan Smith wants it. But we're not going to be quiet on this show. We're watching, and we're going to break it down. I can promise you when they come back on Monday. Let's go to USC. I'm watching the quarterback. Because if you think about Lincoln Riley, it'd be easy to say, oh, I'm watching the defense. I want to see how they progress. It's a new defense. We know that. But I want to see what Miller Moss looks like. I saw what he looked like last time out. Threw 6 touchdowns in the Holiday Bowl. Earned the MVP in the Holiday Bowl. Ended that game with 3 career touchdown passes. I mean, he tore up Louisville in that game. And a lot of those throws were down the field throws. Thought he looked really good. So is he ready to just take over a system that has been so advantageous for quarterbacks over the last decade? Really interested to watch the quarterback spot for USC. With Iowa, I want to see the new offensive coordinator. And well, if you think Tim Lester is going to roll out this red carpet of creativity, I think we're probably going to be a little misguided. I think it's going to be kind of what we've expected, right? But when you think about where he's been, they have not been good offensively, okay? They have not. But he's a veteran. Tim Lester has been around. Whether it was at Western Michigan and looking at how their offense kind of improved over the course of his tenure, they were actually ranked as high as 12th offensively back in 2021. I think it's going to be really interesting to see what he does. Now, it's probably not going to be flashy. That's not who Iowa is, but they're going to be better. There's no doubt they're going to be better. And hopefully Tim Lester can bring something out of the offense. And maybe we'll get just a glimpse of that here when they take the field this weekend. In the ACC, Florida State, I want to see all the new players. And they just got to the top of the mountain. They're at 13-1, a tremendous breakthrough. They've done a great job. I mean, a really good job of bringing in high school talent, and they've been pretty active in the portal. Now the goal is to get from 13-1 to into the playoff and to making a lot of noise in the playoff. Now they had to replace Jordan Travis with DJ Uiagalelei, who I thought had a huge bounce back and career resurrection at Oregon State, but he's familiar with this world. He's played in the ACC before. He stepped into some big shoes before. But you also think about some of the other transfers that they've added. Roydell Williams, transfer running back from Alabama. A lot of depth being brought into the backfield. Know that they lost some of their best rushers from a year ago. Curious to see how Malik Benson looks. Minimal production at wide receiver for the Crimson Tide, but was a top JUCO prospect and a guy that we thought had a big chance of making a lot of noise last year. Jaylen Brown, who is a ESPN 300 receiver in the 2023 class, was at LSU, now goes to Florida State. And then finally, Marvin Jones, who was at Georgia for a bit, but of all the additions in the portal that they've made at Florida State, I think Marvin Jones has a chance to make a lot of noise. And he's got some big shoes to fill. There's no doubt he's got big shoes to fill because Jared Verse and Jermaine Johnson before him were incredible. But I think Marvin Jones is well positioned to be the next guy that could take over that significant role on that defense. At Notre Dame. Now, it's not often. It's not often that I'm going into a spring game super fired up about a backup quarterback's opportunity. But I think if you look at the recruiting that Notre Dame's had in the last 15, 20 years, the two best recruiting prospects that Notre Dame's brought in at that position are Brady Quinn and Jimmy Clausen. I'm talking just pure passers, guys that can operate from the pocket and that can just carve you up. Jimmy Clausen and Brady Quinn, both obviously went on to the NFL, both obviously went on and had great careers there in South Bend. But CJ Carr might be the next one. And there's a ton of buzz about CJ Carr and what he's done in the scrimmages up to this point. Now, people are saying, well, it's the number 3 defense. Fair. I don't care if it's against the number 5 defense. I can tell with where the ball is placed and the timing and the footwork, I might be able to tell whether or not he's the real deal, even if it's limited action. Because if you look at the numbers, last week he was 8 of 13 for 99 yards, including a 21-yard touchdown strike to Cam Williams on 3rd and 13. There's a lot of buzz. He also has worked a little bit with the second unit a couple of times. So that's something I'm going to be watching very closely. Is CJ Carr potentially the future for Notre Dame? We know the present, and that's Riley Leonard. No one's going to change my mind on that. But if CJ Carr can be the next man up in the event in which Riley Leonard's unavailable, remember he banged his ankle up last year, had to miss a little time, and wasn't super effective as a result of that ankle injury. Can CJ Carr provide the insurance for Marcus Freeman at the quarterback spot? Because if you think about Notre Dame, they've had just about everything. They've had just about everything. What they have not had is a complete game changer at quarterback. And that's no disrespect to Sam Hartman. That's no disrespect to Ian Book. That's no disrespect to any of the predecessors. DeShone Kizer, who you thought could be a game changer based on talent, but it just never materialized. Maybe CJ Carr is that guy, and we'll get a glimpse of what he might be able to do this weekend. We'll move into the Big 12 at Baylor. Dave Aranda indicated that there is a significant battle going on right now for the starting quarterback job, and it's down to two guys, Sawyer Robertson and Daquan Finn. Now, Robinson has been really good on some of the intermediate routes, and by all accounts, the timing has been really solid. He's also done a pretty good job in designated runs for the quarterback spot, and he's been there for a while, so his leadership and the established relationships he has in the locker room have already been working in his favor. But Daquan Finn spent the last 4 years at Toledo, where he was the MAC most valuable player last year, threw for over 2,600 yards and 22 touchdowns, while adding 560 on the ground along with 7 touchdowns on the ground. Remember, he took Toledo to a conference title game. So at the beginning of spring practice, you would have said it's probably a coin flip. Now, maybe the spring game might give us a bit of an indicator as to who has the lead in that race. Moving into the SEC. Couple of spring games going on this weekend. Still weird for me to say that Oklahoma and Texas are in the SEC, but I will be watching them. I'm going to start with Mississippi State. I want to see the new offense. Last year and the challenges that they had offensively and being consistent was something that was really disappointing. Thought maybe that Zach Arnett bringing in an offensive style that would be a little more balanced would be beneficial, but it just never really materialized. Well, Mississippi State is going back to the drawing board and implementing an offense that is very, very exciting. If you haven't watched Jeff Lebby's offense, you haven't watched Oklahoma the last couple of years, maybe you've only watched SEC football, think Tennessee. And that's very similar to what they've done in the past. So very excited to see what things might look like with Jeff Lebby and that new offense. At Oklahoma, all eyes for me are going to be on one guy in particular, and that's Jackson Arnold. There are a lot of expectations coming into the SEC, new quarterback, new offensive coordinators, new defensive coordinator, and there's a lot of things that I'm just not sure of. I think Oklahoma, by the way, they're quietly waiting in the weeds. All the attention has been on Texas. All the talk has been on Texas. Oh, Texas is ready to jump right in. You think about the pecking order in the SEC. It's Georgia, and then Texas and Alabama are right there, 1 and 2. Behind Georgia as maybe the next team up. I think Oklahoma is quietly building a team that has a chance to be very competitive in year number one. A lot of that will depend on the play of Jackson Arnold. Now, against Arizona, anyone that watched Arizona last year know that they were legit on the defense side of the football. So as a result, the turnovers were a bit of a problem in his only start last season. But how has Jackson Arnold progressed, and how does the new offense look? Because the offense is going to be very similar to the way it was, but there will be a few changes, probably a little bit more of an emphasis on the run game this year, knowing who's going to be in charge there offensively for Brent Venables' crew. Seth Luttrell taking over there as the OC. I love Seth Luttrell. I think he's an incredible coach. I think he got a raw deal at North Texas. So I'll be curious to see what he does at his alma mater, where he was a fullback back in the day, but a great, great offensive mind and a guy that I know will bring out the best in Jackson Arnold. At Texas, I'm watching the defensive line. That was their strength last year. That was the best part of their team. And supposedly so far this spring, they've been getting gashed with a lot more regularity than you would like to see. They also had to replace their defensive line coach, Bo Davis, left to become the defensive line coach at LSU. So I want to watch that group collectively. How are they as far as depth? How disruptive are they? Are they able to get after the quarterback? And they're working against a pretty good offensive line. So will they be able to get off blocks and make some stops at or around the line of scrimmage? For Texas A&M, I'm watching the defensive backs. Now, Mike Elko has pretty much addressed some of the needs at that position and then some. Now, the portal has been very, very advantageous for Texas A&M. They brought in 7 defensive backs in the winter window. This was something that absolutely had to happen. But as of last year, I mean, they had lost 5 defensive backs to either transfer or graduation. So I'm going to watch that group. And I think about, too, what Mike Elko's been, just with how he's organized his defense. They put a lot on the defensive backs. They do a lot of disguises. They do a lot of zone pressures. And they really have a smart way of attacking opposing offenses. I don't think they're going to show any of that in the spring game, but I will be curious to see just how comfortable those guys look and whether or not they do need reinforcements, additional reinforcements at that position. And then finally, at South Carolina, I'm watching the quarterback spot. Lenoris Sellers has the inside track to become the starting quarterback for the Gamecocks, but I do think the Gamecocks in the SEC are one of the few teams that would be aggressive in pursuing a starting quarterback. And there's not a lot that are going to be on the move at this point. You've seen a couple guys hop in the portal already. Jacoby Criswell from Arkansas. I think he can be a starter somewhere, but the transferring within the SEC, would he have to miss a year? All these other aspects of it. So I'm watching Lenoris Sellers. Can he lock down this position for South Carolina here in the spring game? I'm not sure if he'll be able to, because I'm sure they'll probably add a guy and that competition will continue. But either way, I'll be watching the quarterback very closely when the Gamecocks take the field on Saturday. That'll do it for us here at Always College Football. Continue to ask all of you to continue to like, rate, and subscribe to the show wherever you get your show, whether that's on Apple Podcasts, on Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. If you're here with us on the ESPN YouTube channel, hit that thumbs up button and subscribe to the ESPN College Football channel. So for all of us here at Always College Football, for Mark, Jake, Jack, the other Jack, I'm Greg. We hope you have an awesome day. And remember, it's Always College Football. Hey guys, it's Greg McElroy. Thanks for watching Always College Football. Make sure you like, rate, and subscribe to ESPN's YouTube channel and wherever you listen to your podcasts.